Hey everyone, we're back, and I'm happy to say that I have Ronit Pitale with me, and you know what that means. It's the UFC, and Conor McGregor is back, more importantly, and we're going to be covering UFC 257, Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor Part 2. Ronit, now, before we actually get into all the fights, let's run through all the fights that are actually there in the main card that we will be covering once again. So, obviously, apart from the fact that Poirier and McGregor are going to be going at it once again, we also have other lightweight fights. So this time, all the men's fights are lightweight fights. So we'll be covering, obviously, Poirier and McGregor, then Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler. I know for a fact that you are a big fan of Dan Hooker. You think he's one of the best talents in the lightweight division currently. Then we have the women's flyweight between Jessica Eye and Joanne Calderwood. Now, that's also going to be fun. We all know what JoJo was meant to have played Valentina Shevchenko, but sadly, Valentina had a knee injury, I believe, at that point in time.
Yeah.
Then we also have the lightweights, Matt Frivola and Otman Aizatar. Now, the less said about that one, the better, I feel. But we'll get into that a little bit later on. And finally, we have the women's strawweight. Now, I'm actually looking forward to this because it's two Brazilians going at it. So, Marita Rodriguez facing off against my favorite, Amanda Ribas. So, okay, let's kick it off, Ron. Firstly, how are you doing? And secondly, how excited are you that the UFC is off with a bang in the new year? We all saw what happened today with Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar. What was that? How many shots did he have? How many significant strikes did Max have? Some 447 or something.
Yeah, they tweeted out something crazy. I think it was some crazy number. It was definitely 300 plus, I think.
Crazy fight. It's crazy. And not only him, even Calvin kept up, which was quite surprising. I honestly thought that Max would have finished him off probably in the third or fourth. But he kept at it. And we saw that when he played fought against Dan Hooker as well with Calvin, that he can actually keep up. And stamina doesn't seem to be a problem. Of course, we all know Max's stamina. He can go on for days, probably. So, there's Neil Magny, who's back in action against Michael Chiesa. Any prediction on that one?
I think Chiesa has actually moved up a weight class now. He was at 155 before. He was dehydrating, killing himself, literally to make that weight. I think he'll come afresh at 170. I think he's had one fight. He beat Carlos Condit, who won today, actually. But yeah. But I also feel Magny is underrated on this one. If I have to pick, I think I'm going to go Magny.
Wow. Yeah, I think you're right. I never thought about the weight cutting and all of that. So now that he's moved up one, maybe it'll still take him some time to get accustomed to it. But Magny fought well in his last fight and he came back after so long as well. So
he was a little biased. I feel Magny is really underrated. So I mean, that's just some bias over there from me. But yeah.
Sure. Okay. Now, enough of what happened and what's coming up. We need to focus on the main fight and probably what could potentially be the fight of the year already.
Definitely.
Poirier, the diamond against the one, the only, notorious. So let's get right into it. Firstly, I'll just pull up the tail of the tape. Now, of course, Poirier is, well, just turned 32. And Conor, we all know, so we share our birthday, so he's going to turn 33 in July. Now, they fought back in 2014, I believe, if I'm not wrong. And of course, that was a first round knockout win for Conor McGregor. But Poirier has changed twofold, threefold maybe even. And ever since he lost to Michael Johnson, he's gone on a tear, barring Khabib being the one block in his path. But he blocks everyone, doesn't he? So what's your take on this fight? McGregor's coming in as a hot favorite, minus 300, which is quite shocking. If I'm a betting man, I'm definitely going in for Poirier. So what's your take on this fight, Ron? I know there's, like, you love these two fighters. Both of them are one of your top fighters and we all love the lightweight division. So where do you see this fight heading?
Yeah. So I think, like you already mentioned, they fought before And I think people are giving an undue amount of weight to that last fight. Conor McGregor has also evolved leaps and bounds. There's no denying that. But you're not talking about the same Dustin Poirier. This is a different animal altogether. I mean, the odds are crazy. I mean, like you said, if I was a betting man, I would definitely double down on the diamond. The odds are fantastic. That's not my prediction. I'm just saying, if I were an odds man, that's where I would go. Now, the way I look at this fight is, okay, a couple of things. One, I think the increase that fight was at 145. This one is at 155. I think it actually, to a certain extent, is good for both of these guys, because I think both of them were sort of sucking themselves down to make 145. I mean, we absolutely saw Conor was like a walking corpse at 145. And Dustin is a big guy. He's not small either. Like, he fits into that 5'9", 5'9½ frame, but he fills it out really well. You know, he's not somebody who is I would say he's the right size lightweight. You know, he fits in there perfectly. The same applies for Conor as well. So I think, one, Dustin comes in with a better chin than last time. He definitely comes in with a better chin. I don't think it's going to be a one-trick pony where Conor catches him with the left and he can end it like last time. The second thing is, I feel you're dealing with a Poirier that's a lot more mature, who's been in wars, who's been, I mean, just his last couple of fights, the fights against, I mean, I'm going to discount Habib because, you know, you can't talk about that. But just look at his fight against the
Dan Hooker was
Hangman.
the last one. Yeah.
Just look at his fights against Eddie Alvarez. I mean, he smoked these people. These are elite competition fighters you're talking about, and he's evolved day and night. So I feel Conor is not dealing with the same guy, and that's something I'm sure he's intelligent enough, he knows that. Dustin's not dealing with the same guy as well either. The only thing is, we don't know how Dustin would have dealt with Conor then, because that fight really didn't go too long. We didn't get to see it really play out. We got like a premature, I won't say it's a premature stoppage, a pretty quick stoppage. He was out. But I feel that this time it's going to be something different. It's going to be definitely more long drawn out. I don't think it's going to be a one and done. And I hope, against all odds, that this time Poirier is not drawn into a war, because I feel that that could be his kryptonite. He could get caught, and that's something that could, you know, spell the night out for him. But he needs to fight a smart fight, is what I feel. He should not get dragged into that stand-up battle with Conor. He has a fantastic ground game. I mean, the diamond is brilliant on the ground, highly underrated. I mean, just if he goes there, he will put Conor in a tough spot. I want to see a good mixed martial arts contest.
Which, Ronit, actually brings me to one point, and I'm glad you brought it up right at the end, was that Dustin has a very good ground game. Now, the difference over there, you'll see it as well. I mean, he has submitted a lot of fighters. Not a lot, but like, he's got what, 24% of his fights he's won by submission. And we all know that is one thing which Conor does not enjoy, is ground battles. Because and I'm not saying that because of the Khabib fight. Nate Diaz again is a much bigger guy, so I don't even want to discount that. But it's just not the same if you bring Conor onto the ground, for sure. And with the striking ability that Dustin has, a ground and pound is something that he can definitely leverage against Conor. So I'm interested to see if Dustin actually takes the fight to the ground and tries to take the submission approach against Conor. But Ron, again, we've always said this and we've always discussed this. Conor historically has not been a guy who fights every year, right? He didn't fight in 2019. He didn't fight in 2017. He didn't. Before that, yes, he had three fights in 2015 and I believe a couple in 2016. But the point is, he just comes back and he's always ready. And you never know what to expect. But I think this time he does look much more ready than he was against Khabib. He was going through a lot at that time as well. He was doing the wrong things. This time he stayed away from all the social media. And even Dana White in his interview said it, right? That he's seen both Conor McGregors and he sees the real Conor McGregor now.
Yeah, just to speak a little more to that, I mean, One thing also you'd like to consider about Conor is this time there is no psychological warfare. You know, I was just thinking, you know, some of the guys Conor's put away are easily, okay, I wouldn't say easily, I'd say Conor McGregor's ground game, his wrestling defense is definitely something that's underrated. There, even in the Diaz fight, I mean, he got tired out. He shot the shot, made Diaz stop, then he took his back, pounded him, choked him. Habib, you can't, if Habib takes you down, that doesn't mean you're a bad wrestler. That doesn't mean anything. You can't judge your wrestling credentials. Chad Mendes took Conor down, kept him down for a couple of rounds, got tired. Eddie Alvarez got drawn into a slugfest with Conor, and that's where he got hit. Poirier, the first time, got drawn into that same psychological warfare with Conor, refused to go to the ground, chose to stand up with him, got clipped, got finished. I feel this time, Conor is not bringing that psychological warfare. He's not trying to draw the guy out. He's not trying to put Jose Aldo, for that matter. Aldo had the ability to take Conor down and submit him. He came out swinging, Matt threw one punch, that's it, lights out. Without that psychological warfare, is it going to be that easy to draw Dustin Poirier out into standing with Conor? If Conor is unable to have Dustin Poirier commit to a stand-up battle, I feel it's going to be a really long night. And without actually coaxing or without actually, you know, antagonizing Dustin to stand up. I mean, see, Dustin doesn't need that little bit of a break. He's a dog. He wants to get into fights. He gets into wars for God knows what reason. He can do it, you know, conservatively. That's the kind of guy he is. He likes to take the fight to you. He likes to bring the fight every time. My only apprehension is he just shouldn't get drawn out. And if Conor can fail that draw out, I feel it does base slightly in Poirier's favor.
I don't know. I'll admit I have a bias towards Conor. So, and that's more so because I don't know, like, we never know what he can bring to the table. And and more often than not, he's always proven his critics wrong. He always gets the job done. And he's, and like you said, Ron, like, I know it's a thing about him getting into the other person's head and then forcing them to attack him so that he then is a basically a more like a counter puncher. And then he just knows his reach. So then that's what he's very good at. And that's what he leverages in his fights. So I'm actually interested to see how he goes with it. Sure. But again, if you just see the average fight times as well and you look at it, of course, like you said, Dustin's been at it in terms of like long fights and marathon fights recently. So he definitely has that. But Conor never has needed that historically as well. So that left hook is still, I think, going to be something that Dustin needs to really watch out for.
Right. Definitely. I mean, see, there is no debating the fact that these two individuals are extremely skilled at the highest level. And if it's just a skill for skill match, God knows it could just go up to a draw. Like, if that's how closely I think the two of them are matched in terms of skill. I feel that Poirier, see, there's no secret as to what Conor McGregor's path to victory is. He keeps it standing, he outboxes you, he outstrikes you, he knocks you out. I feel the mistake Eddie Alvarez made in the Conor McGregor fight is that he first started with a stand-up fight, he lost the stand-up fight, and then he was tired, and then he was thinking of shooting. I don't want Dustin to do the same thing. Dustin, if he has to take it to the ground, he should take it to the ground quick. He should do it when they're dry. He should do it when he has energy. Because you come sloppy against Conor McGregor. If you're tired, you shoot him for a takedown. He's going to hit you with that left. He's going to hit you with that uppercut and it's lights out. If Dustin has to come in, he has to make it a ground fight. He has to do it early. One thing that I noticed when I was looking at the odds, which was really surprising, is that Conor McGregor is, of course, an overwhelming favorite. I was looking at the round odds. So Conor McGregor is a favorite to win it in round 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But if it goes the distance, Dustin Poirier is the favorite.
Oh, right. Okay. I understand. Yeah, yeah. And that makes complete sense.
Finisher. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes complete sense.
Which is why people are betting for the fact that if this goes the distance, then Dustin takes it. And if Conor wins it, he has to finish Dustin.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be true, because I think firstly, match practice is huge. I don't care if you are Conor McGregor or John Jones also for that matter. If you are going up against an elite fighter, and that too, someone who has consistently won also, and he's always improving, like someone like a Dustin Poirier, you're going to have a hard time. And there's no way if you're going the distance that you are going to outbox someone like a Dustin Poirier or outstrike for that matter. And and I like Poirier's game because it's very compact. He stays within his range. He knows what he's doing most times. He very rarely loses his head. Yeah. And the Dan Hooker fight was when I was like, okay, he is now proven to be the real deal. There's not too many people who can actually match up to the diamond at the moment. Anyway, this was just a small glimpse of what's in store for UFC 257. Ronit, let's move ahead to the next big fight. Which is Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler. So the Hangman, and he's going up against Michael Chandler, who's going to be facing off in his first UFC fight. And imagine to have an opponent like Dan Hooker. I wouldn't be too pleased if I was Michael Chandler. What's your take?
A couple of things. Michael Chandler, like you said, it's going to be his first fight in the UFC, and you're going to go up against an absolute killer in the Hangman. I mean, an absolute killer. UFC lights are a real thing. I mean, say what you want. There have been fighters that have been touted through the roof. There's been Ben Askren, there's been Will Brooks. They've all come over from different organizations. They come to the UFC, they see those bright lights, and they just aren't able to pull the trigger. Now, whether that is a true testament to the skill gap between the UFC and the other organizations, or whether it's true that those UFC jitters are very real, and once they hit you, it's pretty difficult to recover from them, I'm not sure of. That being said, you have cases on the other hand. You have the king of the underground, Eddie Alvarez. He came straight in from Bellator, became a champion. He had a breaking even period as well, though. He struggled in the beginning. With Chandler, he's 34. This is his, to a very large extent, I'll say his final years in what would be his peak, is what I would call them. He has this in the next couple of years to basically make a title run, go for a title. And giving him Dan Hooker is no joke in his first match. It's just Dan Hooker's striking is on a level. And he got outstruck by Poirier, let's not forget that. But Dan Hooker's striking is on a level. The way he digs to the body with those hooks, his combinations, his timing, his footwork, he has it all tied down. I'd say Chandler, more of a holistic fighter. He has the wrestling. He can definitely go there. He's had good fights in the past. It's not that he hasn't. He's fought Eddie Alvarez himself. And I think he's beaten Eddie Alvarez, if I'm not wrong. But it's going to be a pure striker versus a mixed martial artist. I don't feel if it remains standing the entire time, Michael Chandler will be able to hang with the Hangman. I do feel he will have to mix it up, will have to throw in a little bit of wrestling. And again, not get drawn out in a war with the Hangman, because that's not going to go his way.
When you pull out the tail of the tape, Ron, and you have a look at it, you see the reach advantage for Dan Hooker. And that's another big, big worrying sign. So that's why, like, if it stays on it, if it just becomes a boxing fight or a striking matchup, and I don't see any chance for Chandler to be able to do anything. Now, you look at the odds also, but I'm surprised that these odds are worse than the Poirier and Conor odds. So it just gets me wondering, like, is that how highly Chandler is rated because of his performance in the Bellator? Of course, he was a Bellator champion and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's just puzzling a bit.
You can't overlook Michael Chandler, but I also feel you can't underrate Dan Hooker. So, I mean, see, Chandler in his own right, if you are a mixed martial arts fan, if you have been following the sport for a while, you know who Michael Chandler is. And you know he's been due for the UFC for a while now. He says for him, this is the perfect timing in his life. He said that I would not like to have done it at any other time, where I was in Bellator, when I was in other organizations at that particular point in time, it made sense for me to be there. And I feel right. And if I had come to the UFC at any other point in time, I don't think I would have been able to perform, but I am here at just the right time in my career. He has that confidence. He has that skill set. He's a fantastic wrestler, good on the ground, very good stand-up. Not taking anything away from the stand-up as well. For all you know, he might catch Dan Hooker and end his night, but you can't bet against that. He does deserve every ounce of respect he's getting, is what I feel. And hey, that's probably what your odds are showing.
Fair enough. The only thing with Michael Chandler for me is, Ron, I feel like he's very unlucky to be going up against someone of the level of Dan Hooker. And Dan Hooker has fought a lot of fights in the recent past. So he has that UFC match experience more than anything. So I feel like it's a bit unfair to judge Chandler based on this fight. No matter, of course, if he wins, then nothing like it. But if he loses, then it's going to be quite... Everyone will be wondering whether he was ready or not. And I think that's just unfair to be questioning his skill level, because he's definitely, like you said, a top fighter. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what's better. He was the backup fighter for Habib and Poirier, which is crazy, right? Which is, the UFC thought he was ready to be straight away thrown into a title shot. And I mean, obviously, I'd say deserves a lot more. I'm sure people are giving him the respect that he deserves, and so are the odds makers. But I feel, yeah, he's earned every bit of it, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he takes it away from Dan that night. So, yeah.
Fantastic. All right, so let's move on to our third fight. Now, Ronit, I know you have a strong opinion on this one. So it's Jessica Eye against Jojo Calderwood. Now, so now I'll just pull up the tail of the tape to just give everyone a perspective of what we are looking at here. Now, both of the fighters are quite experienced and pretty much veterans in the UFC. They match up almost the same. Their height is literally nearly equal. Their reach, Jessica has a small 1.2 centimeter advantage, which is practically nothing.
Yeah.
But you just look at the recent past of both the fighters. So what's your take on this fight, getting into it?
Yeah, so I'm not personally a very big fan of Jessica Eye's fighting style. I think she's more of a point fighter, someone who tries to draw out the decision. And I won't say it's a knock on her ability or her mentality or anything of that sort, but I just feel different fighters have different styles, and that's her style of fighting. Not very fan-friendly again. She has... that doesn't mean it's not worked for her. She's gone all the way up to Valentina Shevchenko, who is the bullet, and there's no escaping that bullet. But she got knocked out over there. She did make it all the way to a title shot, though. Joanne Calderwood, on the other hand, big fan of her fighting style. She goes out there, she puts it on the line. She has that. She will bring an entertaining fight to you, or she will get finished trying to do it. So, you know, she's one of those fighters. Very unlucky, like you said, was in line for a title shot against the bullet. Unfortunately, Valentina got injured. She fought Jennifer Maia. She lost to Jennifer Maia, who then went on to like do a pretty good job against the bullet. Came up short, but went the distance with her. But coming back to Jojo, I feel a little unlucky last year to not get her title shot. I do feel if she gets to Jessica, she will be next in line for a title shot. I don't see any... I don't see Jessica finishing this fight in any way. I don't see a clear path to victory for her over here. I would lean Jojo, and I would go Jojo by, let's say, either KO or TKO.
You know, even Valentina herself thought that Jojo's probably the next worthy opponent for her. And that's probably because of the style of fighting, because it's quite a high-risk sort of strategy that Jojo takes on. That's why I think people will judge too much based on her results, because she lost her last two fights. She lost to Katalin Chukejian, which was also, again, I mean, it's a hit and a miss sort of thing, right? I feel like if she gets more into, like, I think she'll come better prepared when she faces off with Valentina. Of course, if she overcomes Jessica, and I think, Ron, the way you mentioned it, the odds perfectly, also cover that up, with Calderwood being the favorite at negative 120 as compared to Jessica being a plus 100. The thing is, again, even if she gets a title fight, let's say JoJo does get the title fight, let's say she does beat Jessica, do you see her possessing any sort of challenge against Valentina? The age gap is too much. Valentina's too athletic and too fast. So do you see any threat from her?
As much as I love Joanne Calderwood, and I mean, there's nothing to not love about her. She brings it. She has, she took the Jennifer Maia fight because she wanted to stay active. She didn't want to be an inactive fighter. There's so much to love about her, but there's so little that you can do to the bullet at this point, right? I mean, I personally don't, unfortunately, feel that even if she gets passed through Jessica, which I think she most definitely should and will, she doesn't have much to offer. Because, I mean, Joanne's going to keep it standing. If it goes to the ground, I mean, I think Valentina Shevchenko ends it pretty quickly. And on the feet, staying on the feet is the better option for Joanne Calderwood based on her skill set.
Yeah.
But based on Valentina's skill set, how do you even stand with the bullet? I mean, she's an elite kickboxer, an elite Muay Thai fighter. You have nothing to go there. It's pretty much a first down finish.
And there's no way, Ron, that she's going to make it to five rounds with Valentina. There is no way in a title fight. There's no chance. Which actually takes me to the next fight now, Ron. I know this fight is quite an underwhelming one and quite anticlimactic for both of us. But nonetheless, it's still an important fight. It's in the main card. The Bulldozer versus the Steamroller. Now, Otman Azaitar, he's Moroccan. He's the brother of Abu Azaitar, who is a successful middleweight fighter in the UFC. The fun fact about Otman Azaitar is that he's unbeaten ever since he's joined the UFC. Actually, he's not lost any fights in mixed martial arts professionally. And he comes into this one, obviously, an overwhelming favorite. But the Steamroller, Matt Frivola, is like, again, I don't think he really stands a chance up against Otman. And I mean, he's got a good record as well, 8-1-1, but the odds are completely in the favor of Otman at minus 160. The tail of the tape is exactly the same. They are the same age. They have the same height, and reach also is the same. So what's interesting about Azaitar is he's won 77% of his fights by TKO. That's why he got his nickname, the Bulldozer. He's finished two fights within 4 minutes. And that is pretty amazing for anyone for that matter. And to be doing it at the UFC level speaks volumes of him. So Ronit, anything on these guys?
Yeah. No, not really. I think this is one of those fights where Dana White is trying to throw in two guys who he feels that we should know about. I mean, to be very honest, not been following either of their careers too closely for that matter. But I think it's going to be a good fight. I mean, he's putting them up on the main card at number four. He definitely probably sees that this is probably going to be an entertaining fight, if nothing else. But yeah, I won't go too strongly in either direction on this one. But yeah, I mean, if we have to pick, let's just go with the favorite.
Always go with the Moroccan, man. I don't know. Moroccan just seems like the better choice here.
Very nice.
Bringing that African heat. Anyway, let's move on to the last fight of the main card. This is personally my favorite fight for a lot of reasons. So Amanda Ribas facing off against Mariana Rodriguez. Now, what's your take on this one, Ron?
Yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, Amanda Ribas has become a big star in the last three to six months. I don't know when her last fight was, but she took out Paige VanZant, made it look pretty effortless for the most part of it, just took her down, submitted her, armbarred her, and that was the end of the night.
She made VanZant look like an amateur. I remember we were watching it together.
Yeah, it was, and there was like a very significant difference in terms of skill set. To be fair, both of these ladies, Brazilians, both have a good jujitsu background, but Amanda Ribas is a black belt and is on a different level. I think she's a judo black belt and jujitsu black belt. Marina Rodriguez is again, I think she's a purple belt, if I'm not wrong, and more of a striker from what I've seen in the recent past. Her key to victory will be to try and keep it standing, but I don't think she has much of a chance. I think Ribas takes her down and submits her. So I have Amanda Ribas on this one. I have her by submission. It's going to be a clear, striker versus grappler, and Amanda Ribas's grappling is on another level, to be very honest. And I don't see how Marina Rodriguez really manages to hang in there with her.
Just to put all the things that you said into perspective to back it up, Ron, Amanda Ribas's finishing is split one third in terms of all her finishes. So she's got 33% in knockouts and total knockouts. She's got 33% with submission, and she's got 33% with decisions. So you're absolutely right with that. And where you clearly mentioned that Marina depends on her striking, she has 5.82 significant strikes per minute, but Ribas is not far behind. She's at 4.84. Plus, then you have to contend with all the grappling of Ribas, which is absolutely terrific. Her takedown average is 2.02 per 15 minutes. But basically, she takes you down and then she's already like controlling the game. So absolutely. What's amazing though, Ron, is their defense though. Takedown defense, Marina's is 84%. And I was quite surprised. Of course, we all know that Ribas's is also going to be high at 85, but because she's generally the one who's winning those grappling battles. But when it comes to striking, Ribas's defense is 74%. So it's going to be a very, very long fight for Rodriguez as well, I feel, this time out. Another worrying sign for Marina is that she has never finished a fight, in at least in the UFC. She's gone the distance in all her fights. I think you're absolutely right. Ribas is too strong, and she's honestly one of my favorite fighters at the moment. But Ronit, one last take on the main event of them all. Who is going to win? What's your prediction? Which round will it be? And what do you see next for Conor, regardless of the result?
Okay. I'm going to go contrarian on this one. Much against my basic instincts. But I feel that this time, I think Dustin Poirier takes it. And I don't think there's much that is to be said in terms of what's next for Conor if he loses this one. The only thing I'm betting against when I'm saying this is that Dustin Poirier smites a smart fight. He doesn't get drawn in. He's matured years, and in terms of skill set, leaps and bounds. He stays put. He gets the finish. He submits Conor McGregor. That's what.
Oh, you're going with a submission. Bold statement. Wow. Okay, there you have it, folks. Ronit has given his inputs on UFC 257. Ronit, thank you so much for being a part. Always, it's always great to have you. Looking forward to the next big event. And for all those tuning in, please like, share, comment, subscribe. We're on every podcast platform you can think of. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. You can catch the videos over there. And we'll be back soon with another new episode. Till then, take care and tune in to UFC 257 on Sunday, 8:30 a.m. Do not miss it. It's 24 Jan. Thank you.